Some unionists fear Zimbabwe-style land grabs, retribution on security force members and a loss of their identity in a united Ireland. They are some of the concerns raised in a report by the Irish Senator Mark Daly. But do unionists really have anything to fear from a united Ireland? What do you think at home this morning? 030 30 80 55 55. With me this morning I have commentator David McNary. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Vinny.
And Pater Tobin, the ANSO leader. Good morning to you, Pater.
Good morning.
I should also say he also sits in the Irish Parliament. Mark Daly carried out the report because he was worried Ireland could stumble into unity unprepared with grave consequences. David, your reaction to that?
Well, we're not stumbling anywhere. It's not a question of, I've read this report, it's not a question of any of unionist fears. It's really a nonsense discussion to suggest, as they're trying to, remove the fears and unionists would just walk mildly into United Ireland tomorrow.
Well, what are your fears if a united Ireland did happen? And I know that is a theoretical thing, I'm not saying it will, but if it did, what would your instant fears and concerns be, David?
I tell you what the fear, and it is hypothetical, and I can only discuss it with you on that basis. What happened to the unionists after partition? What happened to the unionists, real unionists, left behind in Monaghan, Donegal and Cavan? Who are Ulster unionists? They're no longer there. There's no trace of them. They were wiped out. Republicanism took them out, got rid of their Britishness, told them they weren't to be British. And yet, on the other hand, no such thing happened in Northern Ireland. Nationalism has flourished, as we see. And my fear is that this is just more than a takeover. This is actually an unconditional retreat, and you will be punished. And these
what are you basing that on, David?
Pardon?
What are you basing that on?
Well,
an unconditional takeover.
Well, that's what the whole project has always been. We're nearly 100 years old, unionism and Northern Ireland. And throughout my lifetime, I haven't been there for 100 years yet, but throughout my lifetime, it's been resistance to that takeover.
OK, let's get Pater's response. Pater, you've heard what David said there. He feels an unconditional takeover is what would be and what he believes is on the cards.
Well, to be honest, first of all, I would like to say that AIMTU, our new political party, believe fully in self-determination. We believe that everybody determining their own future is a good thing. So, in other words, you know, you make better decisions for yourself than anybody else does. So, you know, your family or friends, you wouldn't trust them to make your decisions for you for the rest of your life, because you know they simply won't make the best decisions for you for the rest of your life. And so it is with countries. So, London, Berlin, Brussels, they'll never make decisions fully for the benefit of the people in Ireland. They'll always make decisions for their own benefits. And anybody that doubts that just needs to look at the Tories over the last number of years with regards to Brexit. They have been completely oblivious to the effects that Brexit would have on the people of Ireland, North and South. And I don't think they even care. And it's funny, this morning I watched...
But of course, you know, people will say they are a unity party and therefore that is at their core.
But if you look at Nigel Dodds this morning, I saw on Twitter this morning, he made a statement in Westminster, and he says that the issues of the north of Ireland are of no interest to most of the people in Westminster, only if it suits their particular agenda. And there was a poll taken of the Tory members in Britain, and they put Brexit ahead of it with regards to importance of the union. Nigel Farage says Brexit is more important than the union. And the truth of the matter is...
No, he doesn't.
If you look at the union as well, the union has been an economic disaster for the north of Ireland. So in the 1920s, 80% of the industrial output of the entire island of Ireland came from three counties around Belfast. Belfast was the biggest city in Ireland. It was the richest city in Ireland. It was growing rapidly. The south was an agricultural backwater known only for beer and biscuits. And if you look at it 100 years on, after self-determination in the south, now it's gone from being a fraction of the size of the North's economy to being 10 times larger than the Northern economy. It exports 15 times more on income terms per individual. people are twice as wealthy in the south, and now Dublin dwarfs Belfast in size. So the first premise of AIM2 is, if we make decisions for ourselves, they're simply better decisions.
Yeah, and, but let's address this, though, towards unionists that live in Northern Ireland and the concerns, again, they might have if a united Ireland was something that did come to pass. This report says there are real and genuine fears amongst that community in Northern Ireland that land, this is one example, land would be taken from them. There would be retribution
members of
the security forces and their community, their identity would be lost.
I want to say to anybody in the north of Ireland who feels like that, that that is absolutely 100% not true. Any unity would be an agreed Ireland. It would be a negotiated Ireland. It would be a pluralist Ireland where the identity and the background and the religion and the views of everybody would be fully respected.
You and the likes of you, Patter, I mean, you can't even refer to my country as Northern Ireland. You disrespect us immediately by calling us the North of Ireland. We're not the North of anywhere. We are Northern Ireland, and we are a sovereign state within the United Kingdom. Now, give us that, and the self-determination...
I'll respond to that point there.
The self-determination that you talk about, well, fine. Self-determination has sustained unionism throughout its history.
Okay, let's let Pat respond to that.
So... The point I'm saying is we need a pluralist Ireland. And in a pluralist Ireland, we have to recognise there are people who are Protestant and Catholic, Unionist and Nationalist. And they're entitled to be who they are fully and without fear or favour whatsoever from the state. So I'm happy that you used the term Northern Ireland, but I'm happy that I used the term North of Ireland. And in a pluralist country, both of those terms are fine and fully respected. And people who want to use those terms, I'm not telling you to use my term. And
We're not in Ireland, and let me give you an assurance. Unionism ain't going that way. We're not going into United Ireland.
Okay. Patter, can I ask, do you believe that any future, for example, border poll, should that be based on a 50% plus one outcome? What's your stance on that?
Are you addressing that to me?
Yes, Patter, sorry.
Yeah, no, I believe in democracy. And, of course, if the union between the north of Ireland and Britain is to be sustained on a majoritarian decision, well, of course, the opposite has to be the case as well. You can't change the goalposts halfway through. You can't, you know, change the rules mid-flow. You can't. It would be unfair to say that it's one threshold democratically in one direction, but it's a completely different threshold on the other aspects. 65%.
But the question is, should it be 50% plus one?
Well, for sure, because like that's the democratic way. And now, to be honest, you can see in the north of Ireland at the moment, you know, people like Eileen Paisley, Peter Robinson, Alex Kane, James Nesbitt, many people from that traditional, let's say, Protestant Unionist background are now realising that, I suppose, a border poll is inevitable, are realising that there's major demographic changes happening, that are realising that actually their future is probably...
I'll give you 10 out of 10, Patter, for your
Ireland.
Propaganda. I'll give you 10 out of 10, Patter, for your propaganda.
Okay, 030-30-80-55-55. John in Belfast, first call on this. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Go ahead, sorry to keep you waiting.
My worries about it, and I don't think it would ever happen, my worries about it is the football. Northern Ireland team would automatically be wiped out, and you'd have a United Ireland football team. FIFA would not allow two international teams on the same...
Is that genuinely your concern, John, if it did happen? I know we're talking theoretical, but we know, for example...
Exactly the same. They wouldn't be able to operate in Europe either. So we're at a complete disadvantage.
And do you feel, John, that would be an attack on your identity, who you are, your place in Northern Ireland?
It's because I'm a Northern Ireland fan. I've supported the Northern Ireland team for over 50 years. I've supported Linfield for well over 50 years.
Right.
And to have that British identity taken away.
You're right, John, but we wouldn't have a Northern Ireland team. We wouldn't be.
No, we wouldn't.
Northern Ireland would be like all those unionists and Cavan Monaghan and Donegal. We'd be wiped out. We would lose our identity. You wouldn't be able to
just to go back to that, because you've mentioned that a few times, David. What do you mean when you say they were wiped out? What evidence do you have there? Let's not forget, for example, the Orange Order still exists in the Republic.
Where are the unionists in the south of Ireland?
But don't answer a question with a question. You said they were wiped out, so what do you mean by that?
Because they're not there.
Yeah, but saying wiped out, you know what that sounds like. So I'm asking, what do you mean? Did they move elsewhere?
I don't... My understanding from talking to people who would have and still would wish to hold an allegiance with Northern Ireland, but who were left behind in partition, and who feel deeply aggrieved at it, Vinnie, that their unionism was taken from them. They couldn't be, they tell me, unionists in the Republic of Ireland. They couldn't function unless they were Irish citizens and Irish Republicans in that deepest sense.
Patter?
There was no place for their unionism.
There's a large...
No unionism.
Okay, let's have a conversation about this. Patter?
First of all, there's a large population of people from a Protestant background living in Donegal, Cavan, Monaghan, indeed throughout the southern state. And indeed, if you look at the number of Protestants living in the south, it's actually increased in the last 20 years fairly in a big way. And the truth of the matter is, you know, you do have expressions of, let's say, British identity among some people in those communities still. And Rosnaula in Donegal is an example of an orange march that happens on an annual basis. And the interesting thing about it is, it happens actually without any... Sorry, it happens without any contention at all, because it's happening in an environment where the state itself is not a contested state. And the truth of the matter is that most people from a Protestant background whose ancestors were unionists in the south of Ireland have come to see the southern state as their state equally and as equal members of the
state. Because they couldn't practice their unionism, Patter.
No, I would disagree. It has more got to do with the fact that...
them from being unionists.
Okay, let's try one at a time.
It's been more got to do with this state being a welcoming, pluralist state, which has allowed people from Catholic and Protestant backgrounds to be who they are fully and to get about their normal daily lives, make a living, raise their families, and be able to engage in society.
You realise, O'Patter, that perception is everything quite often, and this survey does reveal that many unionists have deep, deep concerns about what might happen in the event of a United Ireland if that did come to pass. So we can't sweep that under the carpet.
I do realise...
How do you sell it to them? What would your pitch be to try and set their fears at ease and explain to them why it might be beneficial in the end to them?
Well, first of all, I would say AIM2 has been calling for a new Ireland forum for the last number of months. So we've looked for a forum, a space where people from a unionist background and a nationalist background can actually just sit around a table and discuss these issues.
And I understand that, Patter, but if there's a unionist listening to this morning and they think, no way, do you not want to be part of a United Ireland, because I, as a unionist, would be detrimental to me, my community, my culture. So what can you say to them to try and reassure them?
If you look at the Irish tricolour, the tricolour, by its very nature, is split into three parts, equal parts. The first part is the green part, the third part is the orange part, and in the middle we have white for peace. So the southern state, the whole idea of the Republic is based on pluralism and unity and peace between all our people. This is not a zero sum.
Okay,
game.
Let's go back to the phones.
We don't have to take away from somebody's identity to build a new country. We've actually got more in common than we think.
Okay, let's just go to the phones. We're just a bit pushed for time. Anyway. Mark in Belfast. Good morning, Mark. You've got a question for David McNary.
Finney, I have. I'm afraid I can't let David's assertion go unchallenged. I think the phrase he used was post-partition, nationalists in what he calls Northern Ireland were able to flourish. Now, I wish you could get Dr. Eamon Phoenix on at this point. Catholics in post-partition Northern Ireland were purged from their homes, had to fight for civil rights like votes and houses, had to fight for Catholic schools. So I wonder, how does that square with David McNary's assertion?
Well, Mark, let's be clear. You're talking about sectarian politics.
I'm talking about post-partition people. Okay, well, let's let David respond. Northern Ireland post-partition, they were not free to flourish.
We had to come through this time where I believe, and I was talking about nationalists in Northern Ireland today, are flourishing. They have been offered partnership in government. They refuse it at the moment. They are as equal to me as I am to them, and that is the way it should be. And as far as what you're talking about, what went on in the past, and it was an inglorious past, and dare I say, it happened both ways. That's what we did then. We don't do it now. And there is an opening here, and I happen to believe that There is no pressure. There would be no vote successful in a
vote. Okay, well, let's be specific then, David McNary. Do you agree with what the point the caller was trying to make? Post, you know, the Catholic.
I understand what he's saying. Yes.
Yeah.
And
post partition, there was discrimination from the Stormont government here towards Catholics. Do you accept that?
As far as the discrimination was concerned, the discrimination has been judged upon.
Yes, but do you accept that that happened, David? That's the question.
Pardon?
Do you accept that it happened?
It did, yes.
Okay, so then you can understand why some unionists, obviously, the point you're making, may feel that if you flip that around, it may happen if it was a United Ireland.
Well, it will happen. It's not a question that it might happen. What happened here will happen there. There will be people wanting to punish ex-RUC and UDR personnel, and God knows by what means they would punish them. They want to steal land. They want to put farmers out of their homes.
Potter, yes, please. Potter to Bean.
First of all, there is the southern economy.
Union Jack, you won't allow us to flag the Union Jack?
Nobody in the whole of the 26 counties or the 32 counties wants to steal anybody's land. So let's just put that misnomer to bed, full stop whatsoever. A gentleman came on there a few minutes ago and he spoke about the fact that there might be no North of Ireland team. I would suggest if there was a unified team that we would actually achieve more as a single team than two split teams. And if you look at a reunited Irish state, we would have a population 38% bigger than it is. We'd have a barrier-free market, 25% larger than it is now. We would have 27%
yeah, but
more.
You do realise
in the European part.
Yeah, but Potter, when you talk about football, for example, no, hold on a second. You know that football, quite often for many, is about national identity. And that's why people can be very passionate about it, they get behind it, and they support it. And therefore, if you remove that, as it will be perceived, from one element of the community, that will be difficult for them to swallow, Potter.
If you look at like the Irish Football Association, the FAI seeded from the Irish Football Association. We did have one soccer team. We have one rugby team. We have one hockey team.
No, you don't.
Most of the sports and cricket happen on a unified basis. Let me just finish the statement, please. I won't interrupt you. Most of the sports happen on a unified Irish basis, and they don't engender any difference between nationalists.
Okay, John and Monaghan. Good morning, John.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to pull David McNary up there on a few things. The unionist people and the UVF 100 years ago, not alone did they get the country divided, they got the province divided. The province of Ulster is divided. Three counties of Ulster is in the Irish state, right? They left 150,000 of their own people behind them when they drew a border across Ulster. 150,000 of their own people. David McNally doesn't give two balls of blue snow but them people.
That's wrong.
Okay, well, let's let David respond to that, John. One second, please. John.
It's getting on very well in the Irish state. Thank you very much. How many Protestant people is in the Irish government at the moment?
Well, John,
lots of them.
John, I'm very glad that you're very happy to be Irish. When you left, you weren't, and your ancestors weren't. And that's where that's where the fears are for unionists in Northern Ireland. We're not in Ulster, we're in Northern Ireland. It was terribly wrong what happened over partition. And you're right, John, 150,000 people were left behind. The thing is...
Can I briefly come in there?
They didn't need to stay behind, John. If they stay behind, then they allow...
Okay, let's let John respond to you, David. Let's let John respond. John.
I'm a much better Ulster. I'm from Monaghan, a good Ulster county, so I am. And I think... And I'm proud of my Protestant neighbours.
Good.
We've got Heather Humphreys, one of the top ministers in the Irish government at the moment.
Why are you talking
to David McNary's ear, so it's not...
Why are you continually talking, you people from the south, about Protestants? We are British... And you don't need to be a Protestant, a Catholic, or anything else to be British. You just are British.
You are British as long as the English want to keep
you. Okay, one at a time, please.
As soon as the English cops on to the money you're costing, you'll not be British anymore. You don't worry about that, David. Your day is coming.
Okay, John. Okay, okay, John. John, thank you, David. You want to respond to that just briefly, please?
A big threat like that, I'm telling you, I feel very sorry for you, and there's no way that I'm going to join you in that poor country that you
okay.
live in.
George, good morning to you. Go ahead, George.
Morning.
Quick as you can, because we've only got about a minute and a half left.
Right. Just what Mark was on. Let me tell Mark. I mean, the discrimination. You know, the housing. I was brought up in Brown Square, the bottom of Shackle, and the housing in the 60s and 70s was exactly similar in Brown Square as it was like Hastings Street and Durham Street. So let's put that to bed about the housing, about Catholics are proud of it. My question would be to Potter, and I quote you, you says that 50% plus one will be enough for you because you're a Democrat. Right, so therefore, would you now call on Leo Varga, the Irish government, need you to respect the referendum vote on Brexit, which was a hell of a lot more across the UK, which was a UK-wide vote, a hell of a lot more than 50% one, Potter, but you now call...
Okay, let's let him respond, just because we're tight for time. Potter.
I do respect the fact that there has been a referendum and a decision has been made, but what I have a difficulty with is the issue of consent is part of the Good Friday Agreement, and in the north of Ireland, the majority of the people voted to remain, and yet there's no consent shown to them whatsoever. I would say to David, on my final point on this, I would say, if he's looking for a signpost of the experience of people from a Protestant background in the United Ireland, simply look to Cavan, Monaghan and Donegal and see that these people haven't had their lands taken off them, haven't had any intrusion made against them whatsoever, and in time actually came to feel very strongly that the southern state, they had loyalty to the southern state because of
We have to leave it at that. Potter Tabeen, thank you, and David McNary, thank you very much as well.